Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, episode number 50. We're about to get going on our interview portion with Kara Goucher. It's a very special interview today, but first a message from this episode's sponsor, Austin Jaro. You can check Austin Jaro out up in the mall area, 917 West Central Entrance here in Duluth for anything that you need for your next run. Shoes, clothes, gear. Go online, www.austin-jaro.com. And thanks for supporting the podcast.
And we are now joined for the interview portion of our 50th podcast here at the Duluth Rundown. And we have a special guest, Duluth's own Kara Goucher. Kara, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're super excited. I know this is like a crazy busy weekend for everyone, including yourself. So thank you so much for making some time for the interview. What we'd like to do here is talk a lot about Duluth, the Duluth running scene, what it was for you back in the day, what it is now even today. And so let's get started with that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of your early running experiences?
Yeah, well, I started running pretty young, but not like people always use me as an example of someone that's trained since they were six. And I'm like, no. Like, I would just run in little local races. So I ran, my first run was at the Hermantown Fun Fest or something like that when I was six. And my grandpa took me there. And then we used to have the Mother's Day run. Mm-hmm. And so I would do that every year. And cool. Basically, I remember I did do the Park Point 5 miler a couple times. So basically, like, any little race that popped up, my mom would sign me up for it. So it was just sort of that's how I sort of got into running. And then I went to Woodland Middle School, which apparently doesn't exist anymore. So when I was at Woodland, I went out for the cross country team. And then Dick Skog saw me run, I think at the Swain Invitational, and asked me if I would be interested in coming out for the East High School track team. And so I said yes, barely survived my first week of practice there, but then was basically all in until I graduated.
Nice. You were like, you became kind of the runner focused kid in high school?
Yeah, I mean, I was still doing a lot of other stuff. Like, I was a competitive dancer for my junior year of high school. I also played soccer completely throughout high school.
Nice.
I was in the band, so I was like doing other things, but I mean, everyone knew, like, the thing I was actually good at was running.
right. How did that make you feel as a middle schooler, but then as a high schooler, to kind of all of a sudden now people know your name?
Yeah, I mean, at first I didn't think anything. I was like, sweet, because I came from a family that was very athletic. My mom was remarried throughout a lot of my childhood, and my siblings were all really athletic, and so... At first, I really liked that I finally found something that I was excelling at, and it was kind of my own. None of my siblings were runners at the time. But definitely, by the time I was a freshman and I was, you know, people were expecting me to win the state cross country meet, I started to feel a lot of pressure. And I think that's something that I struggled with my entire career. But I was also lucky to have Dick Skog as a coach who would really shift the focus to the team and always remind me that whatever my best race was, that was going to be enough to help the team. And so, I definitely dealt with a lot of, I mean, I don't think we used the word anxiety back then, but I definitely dealt with a lot of pre-race anxiety. But I don't know, I was surrounded by a great group of people. We just didn't really talk about stuff like that then. It was just sort of like, I'm really nervous. I feel like I'm going to throw up. Oh, you're going to be fine. You know?
Right.
So I'm curious, Kara, was your mom a runner though? I mean, it sounds like she was signing you up for these races and you were willing to go. I mean, how did you even hear about it in the first place?
You know, my grandpa was a lifelong runner.
Okay.
He loved to run. So I actually am out at his property right now and he would run on the dirt roads. He wasn't into racing. He was just into running and to calm his mind. And when I was actually born in New York and I moved to Duluth when I was four after my father passed away, and my dad had my mom run a lot through her grief. And she did do a couple races, and there is photographic evidence. But so really it was my grandpa that got me into it, and then my mom sort of just helped, you know, continue it. She could tell I liked it, she could tell I enjoyed it, and so the two of them really together would like help me find little races and things to do.
Wow, that is really cool. I didn't know that about the part that where your grandfather kind of encouraged running to help through the grief. That's really cool.
Yeah, so my grandparents owned Somebody's House, which was a restaurant kind of out by Mount Royal back in the day. And they would come to our house. I live next to Hartley Field, and they would come to our house to give my mom some relief. And my grandma would play with me and my two sisters, and then my grandpa would take my mom out to run.
Cool.
And she would fight it, and she wouldn't want to do it. And then she'd get out there and decide she could go further. I mean, we all as runners know what that's like, right? And
yeah.
So it really helped her a lot in that time.
Wow. That's awesome.
I think that's pretty rare for a six-year-old to, like, want to actually do races, too. I feel like most six-year-olds out there, if they, you know, are maybe encouraged or forced to run, you know, they say, I hate running. So, I mean, do you remember, Kara? Is there anything that you specifically liked about running or maybe specifically racing, even at a, you know, young age?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just wanted to do the races because that's when I ran. I mean, my grandpa and I would occasionally run around here at his property, but in general, like, I ran when I raced. And what I liked about it wasn't necessarily the racing, although I grew to love racing. It was, I loved the way running made me feel. I still feel that way. I loved, especially back then when I had absolutely no idea what pacing was or anything. And I would run so hard that it would feel like my chest was going to explode. And I know that sounds weird, but I actually loved that feeling. It made me feel really alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something funny about the discomfort is enjoyable.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. Recently, about a month ago, you had posted an article in Women's Running Online about your high school days, a letter to your younger self. That was an amazing article. I have since shared it I have two stepdaughters who are also at Duluth East right now. And I shared that with them because they both are active in ski and track and cross country. Tell us a little bit about that article. I thought it was incredible.
Well, thank you. Thanks for reading it and sharing. I appreciate that. You know, like you asked me earlier, I just developed race anxiety. I developed, you know, and most of it was internal pressure. I felt like I had to win for everybody. I felt like everyone was going to be disappointed if I didn't win. And I just started to put so much pressure on myself where it would be almost at times debilitating. I think of my freshman year at the state meet where it was just debilitating. I mean, I couldn't even perform the way I had been prepared to perform. And I really did struggle with that. And even though my teammates were amazing and my coach was amazing, you know, I never really got help for that part until I was a lot older. And also, you know, and I think we see this a lot in states like Minnesota where middle schoolers can run for the high school. You know, when you're 4'10 and just hair, your strength to power ratio is incredible,
exactly.
Right? Your weight to power ratio.
Yep.
And so I feared puberty. Like, I did not want to get my period because I thought, well, then I'll get bigger and I won't be good anymore. Mm-hmm. And you can't unrun it. You can't outrun it forever. But no one talked to me. And, you know, like, I had seen so many girls in Minnesota be so good, like 7th, 8th, 9th grade, and then fall off the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so worried that was going to happen to me. And I did end up, you know, getting my period my junior year of high school. And, like, overnight, I was like, whose body is this? Like, I don't, this body is so weird. I grew a lot. I gained a lot of weight. And I just didn't have anyone. They existed, but I didn't know them. I didn't know any women that were like, hey, this is actually a good thing. Like, you can't even understand that the paces you run for a 2 mile, you're going to be able to run those for a marathon. But you have to have this new body to have it, you know? Like, no one was telling me that. So I saw it as, like, I had failed. And I just wish someone had been saying, no. You're going to take 2 or 3 years and adjust this body. But then you're going to be able to do things like you never even dreamt of. Like, you'll be able to run a half marathon or a 10K faster than you can run a mile now, you know?
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Just that kind of stuff I wish I had had. I wish I, you know, and this is before the internet and all that kind of stuff, but I just wish I had known that I wasn't failing. And in fact, the talent wouldn't go away. It would come back. I just had to adjust to this body. And then I was actually going to be stronger than I ever could have been when I was tiny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so important. I think
from what I can kind of tell in the younger scene and in the coaching running world, that's getting a little better with that communication, but there's still a long ways to go because, and not even just in the running, but just kids of that age in general, specifically girls, but even boys kind of go through some of that too. And oh my goodness, it's so important to empower them and let them know it's all okay. It's all going to be okay.
Right. Not to fear it. And to just, I just think it's important. You know, I think we see people now talking about it. There was just a recent great piece by Allie Ostrander who also was talking about it. And I think the more it's normalized, and young athletes obviously look up to older athletes, it's easier now too with the internet and social media.
Right.
But I feel like it does fall on us, the older, the older generation, to talk to them about these things, to talk about mental strength and the psychology and how it is challenging. And I don't care who you are, you're going to have doubts, you're going to have fears. That's totally normal. And talk about changing bodies. I do feel like it's our responsibility to talk to them so that they know all these things they're going through are normal and that they will work through it.
Well, I agree. It's such an important message. And from what I can tell, you and a lot of your peers are doing a tremendous job with that. So keep that up.
Thank you.
Do you think, Kara, it's changed since, I mean, you know, when you were in middle school, high school to middle school and high schoolers now?
You know, I think some of it has changed. I think that there are people who are talking about it. I think that there's information there. But I do think there is sort of a culture that perpetuates eating disorders. I think that that's a hard one to break, and I think we still have a ways to go before we really can change the culture totally.
Yeah.
That's a kind of an interesting conversation too, because it is true, right? You know, your weight to power ratio is important, and or makes a difference, really. I shouldn't say important, but makes a difference, right? And I think there's no really getting around that, but there's a balance, right?
Yeah, there has to be balance. And the thing is, like, me, when I was winning my first few state titles at 5 feet tall, and I don't even know what I weighed because I didn't even think about weight back then as much, but, like, that girl could not run New York City Marathon 225. Like, that body couldn't handle the training that it takes, would get broken, wouldn't.
Yeah,
so
no way.
It's saying, like, you know, you do need this strength and you do need to grow. Of course you don't want to be 50 pounds overweight and expect you're going to run a PR, but you need to feel that body, because if you're not feeling it, you can't survive the training, you can't perform.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation. It's an important topic, and I hope it continues to develop and grow in not only just the running world, but just the general population.
Yeah, for sure.
Kara, I'm curious, you know, being a original Duluth runner and obviously coming back for Grandma's Marathon, and, you know, it sounds like still having family in the area and things. What do you like about the Duluth running scene, the community? How is it different from other places? I mean, you've been all around the world, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's, you know, like, tomorrow, if you live in Duluth, what are you going to be doing? If you're
Grandma's
not running,
marathon.
You're cheering or you're handing out, you know what I mean? Like, you are going to be at Grandma's Marathon in some capacity. And that's how I grew up. I used to hand out water on London Road. I mean, I thought everyone was, like, completely insane that was running it. But it's just a huge part of the community. I think that the course is so beautiful. I think that as for elite athletes, they get treated really well here. And, you know, at some of the bigger marathons, you kind of get ignored, or whoever just ran the fastest time sort of getting all the attention, where I feel like here everyone's treated the same. Everyone's treated really well. It's just so ingrained in the culture in Duluth. And, of course, I'm biased. Like, I've been all over. But I do think it has, like, a small town feel, but yet all of the bells and whistles of a big championship marathon or a big major marathon. And so I just, you know, I've only run the half marathon. I've never run the full marathon in Duluth, but I also think the course is really fast.
It is.
I think Dick Beardsley ran what? He ran like 209 how many years ago?
Right. Yep.
Right. Yep. So, I mean, it's a fast, and that was before
something like that.
Yeah. Exactly. So think about that. 40 years ago, now we have shoe technology and all this stuff. So the courses are, I think, they're rolling, so that scares people, but I actually think that makes it fast because your quads and aren't doing all the work. You're not going downhill, or your hamstrings aren't doing all the work. You're not going, you know, it really mixes it up. And so I think it's a really fast course too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's the best, but I mean, obviously I'm not biased or anything.
Right. I got a question. When you did run the half, you set the course record that year. How was that emotionally for you to come back? And was there a little bit of hometown pressure? Was there a little bit of that spotlight feel, or how was that for you?
I didn't feel pressure. I was so excited to come back and I was so confident that I was going to win. I just was in really great shape. I had qualified for the Olympic team. I felt extremely confident. The only thing I was worried about was I've never focused on records. I always knew I wasn't the fastest. I considered myself scrappy. I considered myself able to read races. So that's where I felt like I did well in championship races versus or like a Boston or New York without pacemakers. So I always knew I wasn't the fastest, but I was like, I need that course record. And it's like, that has to be mine. And my coach at the time, Jerry Schumacher, was very against it. He brought me in here tired. You know, it ended up being like a 110-mile week of training. And he said, you know, we're going to run 5:25s and we just need to run on tired legs and get yourself ready. And I was like, no. You know, so we reached this agreement where I would run about 5:25s through 10 miles. And then if he thought I looked good, he would give me permission to go and try to get under. So that's where I felt pressure, because I was sort of doing the calculations the night before and I was like, well, I'm going to have to run under 5 minutes for the last couple miles to get the record.
But
it all worked out.
Yeah.
It all worked out.
Well, I remember that day and really well, and it was super exciting to see Kara Goucher go by, and it was cool. I'm sure that the crowds were
really
pumped.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, I've never been at a starting line where people were like, hey, my son was in chemistry with you. Or, you know, like, it was so amazing. Like, everyone around me was like, ugh, we get it, you know. No, you don't. This is where I grew up.
I bet that in a way that kind of, whatever tensions you, that maybe eased a few of them.
It did. It was so, like, I used to love to race at Harry Jerome because they'd be like, hey, Kara, we're going to line up now. It was, like, so low-key, but you could still run fast there. And it was very similar, only better. Like, literally, I would be running and people were like, we were in biology. You know, like, it was so fun.
That's
like,
so cool.
It was seriously, the highlight of my career was running here. It really was.
That just sums up, to me, the Duluth running scene here, right there.
Yeah.
Here comes kind of like the hometown hero, one of we were just talking before you called, two or three probably greatest Duluth runners of all time. But it's like, oh, we went to school with you. Hey, remember that time when you babysat for, you know?
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, that's what people were like yelling. It was so awesome. And I was like, just loving it. And then at the finish line, my grandparents were there, and my mom was there, and Dick Skog was there. And it just was like, for me to, you know, like, because most of my races, I was off somewhere in Asia or Europe. Like, my family wasn't there, you know? And so to be able to perform and show them what I've grown into, but have everyone be there was very, very special for me.
That's awesome.
So, Kara, here's a question. And you kind of touched on this as the pre-race pressure. And I think a lot of, you know, Duluthians, a lot of our listeners, right? We're a Duluth-specific running podcast, pretty niche. So probably all of our listeners really are thinking that pressure. I mean, they're feeling that pressure right now. Grandma's is tomorrow. A lot of us, myself, we've trained hard, and tomorrow's the day. And so I think it'd be interesting to hear from you, you know, on some of the biggest stages of running. What are some of the tactics or, you know, mental strategies leading up to the race, the hour within the race, and, you know, as you get going to really perform your best, you know, and specifically thinking tomorrow for Grandma's Marathon, we want to launch this podcast, you know, and allow people to listen to, you know, you and get excited for the race tomorrow. So what tips might you have?
Yeah, well, I think some basic ones that we all know, right? Like, you want to carb load, but that doesn't mean, like, eat 8 pounds of pasta. It just means you know, not as much protein tonight, more carbohydrates, that your stores are there and so that you just have to top them off in the morning. Same, mm-hmm. I think a huge one is hydration that people really underestimate. Like, you should be drinking, if you're not eating food with your drink, you should be drinking something that has electrolytes in it all day today and tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. But I think the harder stuff is like the mental stuff. And, you know, like you were just talking about, you've put all this preparation in for this moment and you're just like, oh my gosh, like, please let me do well. What I would always do, and I like to do and encourage people to do, is to remind yourself, like, you've done the work. Like, just like you said, people have trained for months for this moment. They followed their training plan. They've gotten out on good days and bad days, mm-hmm. and they've done the work. And you're not asking yourself to do something you didn't prepare to do. And honestly, if you are asking yourself to do something you didn't prepare to do, you probably shouldn't be asking yourself. You know, I would just always remind myself, you know, like, I'm not asking myself to run 2:15 tomorrow because that's not what I trained to do. But I did ask myself to be ready to run about 2:25. And I would train for varying paces because that's how a lot of those types of races go. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm prepared to do. And so I think it's really important to reflect back on the training you've done and give yourself that credit. And, and you know, like, you're here to do a job that you're ready to do. And this is the fun part. This is the part where all those mornings you got up, all the crappy Duluth spring weather you trained through, now you get to, like, enjoy the good part. Like, this is why you did it. And, and also, it's okay to be nervous, right? Like, being nervous just shows that you care, like that you are invested, but don't let it get so far ahead that you damage what you're ready to do. Remind yourself you're ready to do this.
Right.
Kara, I love what you just said. I'm curious, are you going to get into coaching or do you coach?
Well, I've coached a couple women just on the side that were, trying to qualify for the Olympic trials. I think that someday I would like to be a coach, but I'm crazy. The best coaches I had saw me run, were there with me. And so I'm not ready to commit to something like that right now, just because I have, I travel a lot for other parts of my job, but someday I think, and I don't know if I would want to coach elite athletes or college athletes or even high school athletes. I don't know, but I do see myself coaching at some point, but I want to be 100% in on that, and right now I couldn't be.
Understood. Yeah, exactly. And you've got a family and you got all that. But I mean, from what I can tell from, you know, some of the things you've written and what you just said and social media, I mean, you have the heart of a coach for sure.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
It's very interesting, Kara, and you've kind of talked about two sides of the pre-race anxiety or the pressure. On one hand, you know, you can kind of harness it and, you know, kind of that pressure is good, right? You know, you've done the work and now you're nervous and the nerves kind of psych you up. I mean, that's how I feel personally. But then you kind of touched on maybe the negative aspect of you know, maybe self-imposed pressure. Where's that fine balance, do you think, for you or for any runner out there?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough place to find. I mean, I struggled with that, honestly, my entire racing career. You know, it was like, I remember I ran the Boston Marathon in 2009. I was so, like, I knew I was ready, but I put so much pressure on myself that I had to win. And I just remember afterwards talking to my grandpa, and he was like, did you run as hard as you could? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, what do you want? You know, and he kept saying, do you think that if you had won, like, there would be world peace and there would be nothing wrong with the world anymore? Like, you got to let it go, you know? Yeah. And so I think it's a challenge, and it's a challenge for some people more than others. But if it becomes debilitating, like, you know, like when I was in high school, I'd have a hard time eating, or I'm changing how, like, I know I'm supposed to run. Duluth is a great course to run even on. Grandma's like, if I'm running way too fast in the beginning, like, I'm letting that take away what I know is right for me. Like, I need to slow down. I need to take some deep breaths. This is a long way to go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it can spill over to where you almost self-sabotage, and that's where it becomes unhealthy. I think you just have to be really realistic with yourself of, like, am I, like, it needs to be fun. And when you stop having the fun, nerves can be fun too, because you're like, oh my God, I'm nervous, because I'm excited and I want to do well.
Yeah.
But when you stop having that enjoyment, you know, sometimes you just need to take a step back and say, okay, what is going on here? It is just, I mean, even though we all love it, and I mean, I write in a logbook to this day and I hardly even run anymore. it's huge to all of us, but at the end of the day, it really is just running, and there will be another opportunity.
Right.
Yeah, I always tell people, if you're nervous, that means you care. And if you care, that's a good thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, you've put so much time into it. I hope you care. You know,
right.
You're not getting up on the weekends and leaving your friends and family to do a long run. And then you get here and you're like, meh, you know, like you want to care. You just don't want to care so much that you are almost like immobilized by it.
Yeah.
Do you miss the top of being at the top of the world, that whole lifestyle? Do you miss that?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I miss racing. I miss traveling. I do not miss the training. I'm going to be honest. I don't miss the training or like going to bed early, never like seeing my friends and family. But I do miss that feeling of arriving somewhere, knowing you're fit, knowing you put in all that work. I love pre-race day where you go out and do strides and everyone's kind of checking each other out. And I love that feeling right before the gun went off where like I had butterflies in my chest, but I also was excited, you know? I think I'll always miss it.
That's the best feeling, when you're on the starting line and you're confident. That's so nice.
I mean, it's such a good feeling. You're nervous because you're like, because you know you might have a breakthrough, right? Like, you're nervous, but it's in a good way of like, I know I'm ready to do something special. I loved being an elite athlete. I will probably always miss it, and that's why no one likes to play board games with me, because I'm so competitive, because I'm like trying to relive the golden days.
Well, that brings me to a question that I've wanted to ask someone of your caliber for a long time. Can you tell us like one or two, maybe three things about the life of a pro top level runner and that are the same as a rank and file runner, and two or three things that are different from a rank and file runner?
Oh, geez. I think the same is that you care and you put in the preparation that you can. I mean, when I was an elite, I was amazed by people that had full-time jobs because like, for instance, what's different is before I had my son, I had an alarm that went off at 8:30. I would have breakfast, warm up, meet my coach, spiked and psyched at 10:30, would do my hard session, go to the gym, go get a massage, grab lunch, and then I would go to bed. And my alarm would go off again at 5. And I would wake up, and then in the afternoon, I would do a light run and stretching. And, I mean, what? I would sleep, like, up to 12 hours a day back then, you know? So that's something that, you know, the average runner
that's a little different.
Doesn't have the luxury of doing. It is a slightly stricter lifestyle.
Right.
Like, I didn't go out very often. I didn't see my friends and family as much as I would have liked. But I will say there's something also really rewarding in that strict lifestyle and the rhythm of it, because you know you're giving everything you can. Like, you're really going to find out how good you can be. And there's something about that scary, because sometimes you find out you're not as good as you hope. But also, like, it's very rewarding because you know you're doing everything right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, I think a rank and file runner, they almost have to have this strict lifestyle too, because they're trying to fit in the job and the family and
sneak
in that training.
I'd read about people. I'm blanking on her name right now, but she ran Boston many, many times, and she was a full-time nurse, full-time mom of like 3 or 4 kids. She'd get up at 4 o'clock to do her hard workouts. She would go work all day, spend time with her kids, sneak in a couple more miles, go out with friends, you know, because she has kids, they have soccer games, all this stuff, and then do it again the next day. And I was like, wow, like that to me is so impressive, because like I said, I'm like, waking up at 8:30, having some coffee in my jammies, you know, like just two totally different lives.
Right. But the strictness for you, you know, in peak training form is, you know, all revolved around training, you know, running, I mean, and supporting only that, right? I mean, that seems like that's the strictness.
It's built around like how hard you can go and then how quickly you can recover. And I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I liked the rhythm. I loved a good marathon buildup. I enjoyed seeing the progress week after week. I enjoyed, you know, my last coach that I had was Mark Wetmore, and he would say, you're in the monk phase where, you're just, you know, and I really enjoyed all of that. I really did. But, you know, I had the luxury to do that. Most people don't.
Right.
When you are in that zone of training and that rhythm, there's got to be days when you just don't want to.
Right? Oh yeah, go train.
Yeah, just don't want to go for a run, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'd be staring like a 3-hour run in the face, and I'm like, I do not want to do this. I towards the end of my career, I knew it was sort of starting to wind down, because I would wake up and I'd say, I'm choosing to do this. Like, I'm never going to make another Olympic team. I'm never going to make a world championship team. Like, I'm choosing at 40 years old to get up and go meet these college kids who are going to kick my butt and like try to, you know. And I was kind of like starting to lose the, whereas, you know, 5 years earlier, alarm went off, jump out of bed. But even then, I'd have days where I dreaded long workouts. I dreaded hard workouts just because I knew they mattered, right? So I think that's important to know too. Like, I would often just be lying in bed, like, I don't want to get up. Yeah. I don't want to face this day.
As a rank and file runner, I mean, that's similar, because that's like
75-80% of the week, I think.
Do you have any tips to overcome that, Kara? What were your tactics when you just weren't feeling it, just mentally? I mean, even if it's like, for me, like physically, I feel good. It's not like I'm injured. I just don't feel like it. Right. Like, I'm sick of running, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like knowing what your weaknesses are. So for me, if I just had one run that day, I had to just get up and do it. If I said, oh, I'll run in the afternoon, I'll sleep in and have brunch with Adam and then we'll go, then it would just be weighing on me all day. I'd be so miserable. So for me, you kind of have to figure out what your thing is. But for me, it was like, I just needed to get out of bed right away. Don't let the alarm go to snooze. Never. Just get up and get going. Yeah. And that's, once I got up and got moving, it was like, okay, well, now I'm up. I got to just get it done. And right. So it's knowing like what your weaknesses are. And for me, for sure, even now when I run, I have to just get up and go, because I know I want to do it. I know I'm going to feel better. But if I say, well, I'll just do this, maybe I'll hit the store. And then I'm like, I'm miserable because I know I'm going to do it.
Right.
But now I should have been done for 3 hours and I'm not. And I hate every step I'm about to take.
It's so funny because my wife and I joke about this all the time, because she's a runner as well. And like, it's amazing how much work around the house I can get done before a long run when I don't want to do the long run, because I'll just procrastinate that and I better clean those windows, you know, things I would never do. I better wash the curtains or whatever. We don't even have curtains, but yeah, it's so funny.
It's so true.
Yeah. Funny.
Anything else, Mike? Do you have any other questions?
I guess I wanted to know, Kara, you know, especially you traveling around the world and coming back to Duluth from time to time and now being in the area now. I mean, is there anywhere in Duluth as a, you know, as a kid or especially now that roots, you know, just for training? I mean, where do you like to go when you're in Duluth here? What are your favorite spots?
Yeah, so when I come back, I'm outside of town a little bit on a smaller lake by Island Lake, but I have to go in. I have to go down to Canal Park. I have to go on the boardwalk because I spend so many hours rollerblading down there. I live next to Hartley Field, so I really like to go and walk through Hartley Field. It's changed so much nicer and kept up better than when I was younger, so I have to go there. I have to go to the trails by UMD. I'm trying to think of what they're called right now.
Bagley.
Yes. 100%. Which is so funny, because when I was younger, I thought those trails were so long.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, it's not that long.
It's like a mile and a half.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, Kara, you really overestimated your skill set back then. But I really too like to, like, one of the runs we did at East High School was a Glenwood. And last year, my friends were in town. We just all happened to be in town, three of us at the same time, and we met and we did a Glenwood. So I really, everything that I love to do is sort of like connected to my running. I do not golf, but I like to go by Inker Park because it reminds me of the Swain. I mean, it's so funny. My son is now in love with all these places because I've dragged him there for all these years. And even my husband's like, hey, when are we going to go to Inker? You know? So it's like, it's just sort of become part of the routine to go back and experience the things that I just grew up loving so much.
I've kind of used that, these places as some motivation for people in the past. We mentioned Hartley and the different places here in town, the Lake Walk. And I tell people, you know, Kara Goucher trained here. I say probably at the time, because I didn't know for sure. Kara Bjorklund probably ran. Like, this is Olympic training ground, people. Like, you, and they were just kids too. You know, they were just people at the time, you know, they weren't Olympians then, they became Olympians, and you can do the same thing.
Oh yeah, one of my favorite long runs when I was still competing and I'd come back to visit would be to start down by London Road and then, you know, hop on the path there, run around the lake, cross the bridge, go out mm-hmm. to Park Point mm-hmm. and back, you know, like I still love that run. I can't do it right now, but I love that run. I love running in Hartley. I just love, you know, like I said, I've realized a lot of the things that I thought were super long are not, but so many good places to run in Duluth. There just are.
Yeah.
There's like, even just running along, like, where we used to go, I used to always make campfires with my friends by Brighton Beach. And like, even there, mm-hmm. you can run along there. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many great places where the scenery is just gorgeous.
Yeah, we really have everything except elevation, but we've got some good long hills, plenty of hills, obviously. Mm-hmm. We've got good flat stuff. We've got tremendous trails. So,
yeah, I mean, like, the hills are what make you strong.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I remember going to college and people complaining about a hill. I'd be like, what?
Really?
I mean, what are you guys talking about? Yeah, like, you should see this course we run on in high school. So I think that stuff. And even Scott Jurek has talked about that. Like, when he won, I think, his first Western States, he just was, like, doing tons of hill repeats. So, of course, you don't have altitude, but you have other things that are sometimes that are just equal it out, right? Things that can make you stronger.
Right.
You can't get around it in Duluth, at least for me. I live on the hillside, you know? It's like, well.
Oh, yeah. Nope. You're always straight up or straight down.
Yeah, you have to drive to get down to a flat run or something.
I always thought, like, a really good workout would be if you came up the hill and you, like, ran one block for flat and then you sprinted up a block and then you, like, took a right and recovered and mm-hmm, ran on the flat and then took a left and went all out up a block and then turned left and just kind of worked your way up. So I don't know, you guys are coaches, you can tell me, but actually, I always felt like that would be a good workout.
I take back what I said about you being a coach. Don't do it. that sounds mean.
It does sound mean, but also, like, that would make you tough.
That would make you, and you could totally do that in any handful of neighborhoods here in Duluth.
Yeah,
just snake your way through.
Stair step. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, Kara, I know you've got a really busy weekend. I'm sure you have some other obligations besides, you know, family time as well. So we'll let you get on with your day. But thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It was fun to talk about good times in Duluth.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks, Kara.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
All right, that wraps it up for episode 50 of the Duluth Rundown. Big thanks to Kara Goucher for stopping by the podcast. Big thanks to all our listeners out there. Definitely a shout out for Grandma's Marathon for putting on this race that we all love and kind of the center point of our episode today. That race is tomorrow, so for everyone listening who's racing, just on the flip side, huge good luck to you. And finally, a shout out to Austin Jarro, our sponsor for this episode. And from there, we will see you in July.